Hey, everybody, Ask Me Anything episode. Blake joins us. Become a member today at members.charliekirk.com. Members.charliekirk.com. We talk about what's the problem with Islam anyway. Should we start a third party? What do we have to say to people that I refuse to vote? And there's a lot of them out there. That and more. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast and type in Charlie Kirk Show to your podcast provider. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. I'm going to take the first question, then we'll get to this one. And it's very simple. It's from one of our members, members.charliekirk.com. Charlie, you a Broncos fan now? And Blake, you have big problems like cheering for players because I'm a big Bo Nix guy.
You know, if you want to like be supportive of him, but you know, when you get these things, it's like when I think Brady Quinn got drafted by the Browns and then his sister married to AJ Hawk on the Packers and she got like a double. It's like, no, you have to cheer for one team. None of this.
You cheer for players.
You cheer for one country.
See, I'm
you cheer
different.
For one football team.
I cheer for multiple teams and against several. And then I just love certain players.
It's like my mom is the world's last remaining like diehard Carson Wentz fan because his parents went
He's from North
Dakota.
Yeah,
he was from North Dakota.
Not South Dakota.
And even his parents went to her high school. I think she was a couple years apart from them. But not going good with the Carson Wentz fandom. But she'll eventually cheer for every team in the NFL.
Is he still in the NFL?
I think he's a backup somewhere right now.
He had one of the saddest stories. He was poised to win that Super Bowl, and then he got hurt. Then Nick Foles won it.
I mean, it's too bad. It does feel dark, but it's like he was the reason they made that Super Bowl. If Nick Foles was their quarterback that whole season, they probably wouldn't have made the playoffs.
Nick Foles got hot, though, at the right time.
He got hot at the right time.
And he earned the Super Bowl.
But Carson was on an MVP track until he got hurt. And then,
that's right.
You know, Foles had a magical run as well. But I feel... it is sad, like there's an element of tragedy to it, but he got a Super Bowl ring. They should be grateful for that.
And a lot of money.
And a ton of money.
He's worth like $100 million.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
So it's really not a tragedy. And so the second part of the question is, did you like the Bears draft? I thought they crushed it. They got Caleb Williams and Roman Dunze. It's exactly what I would have done.
Now we're outrunning my expertise.
You're a Packer fan.
I am, but I am an adamant... I have adamantly refused to go with Roger Goodell's plot to force me to care about the NFL all year. So I will look up who the Packers drafted when it is late August and the NFL season is about to start and it makes sense for me to care.
My favorite text message I ever got from Blake with the football. I said, hey, we should tweet. We all agree Roger Goodell sucks. And you said, what did he do? I said, he walked on stage. That's it. Roger Goodell is the worst. Would you agree he's the worst sports commissioner of any major sport?
I mean, the guy, who's the guy who does baseball? I can't remember the name. He's pretty bad, too.
I know who it used to be. I don't know who. Baseball, they're totally messing
baseball,
up.
Baseball, they added the extra runner and extra innings. And as a purist, that offends me very deeply. But Goodell's pretty bad, too. Goodell's probably the most evil. I don't know if he's the most inept.
Goodell does some really bad stuff.
But so clearly the NFL's been
super
successful.
I love the NFL draft. After like the fourth time he's walked up to the mic, he gets booed so much. He's like, guys, just stop it. Every time he walks up to the mic, boo!
You just gotta
get
live
off
it up.
Adam Silver's
the NBA. He like really, he's like, yeah, give me the hate. You have to just live it up a bit. You get paid $25 million a year.
You get $1 million for every team, so you're $32 million a year.
Yeah.
He literally makes $32 million a year to get booed. Stop acting as if you're so upset.
Man.
All right, so let's get into some real questions here. But yes, I have my Bo Nix jersey on the way. I think he's going to be a sleeper. I really do. Okay, let's go to another question here. Let's read it. Charlie, really appreciate all you do. You're a beacon of sanity in the ocean of complete chaos. I'm 55, listened to Rush since 1992, and greatly missed listening to him. But you and Stephen K. Bannon, a few others, are following in his footsteps for the Lord's work. Thank you. I've lost all hope in the Republican Party to be able to resurrect itself. I understand the split in the vote argument, but there are so many disenfranchised conservatives today. If there is ever time for a third party, this has to be it. What is your thoughts on that? Follow-up question, ever considered running ads on Clay and Buck's show? You're much more of a warrior than them. Okay, I'm going to ignore that part, but let's talk about third party. Blake, what do you understand the temptation to go third party, and let's talk about why that's a bad idea.
Exactly. It's always understandable because it's a natural byproduct of we have a two-party system in America. We have two major parties. So in other countries, Israel, for example, they have proportional representation in the Knesset. So if you want to do your little thing, you make your own party and there's 20 parties represented. In America, every election is fundamentally first past the post. Who gets the most votes gets that office. And there's all these factional splits within the parties. This makes it really easy to be disappointed because there's always Republicans who let us down a lot. We are all very used to this.
Yes.
We complain about it on the show all the time. But it is also fundamentally true that, as we've highlighted in America, what's liberal in this country? The universities, a lot of big business, the bureaucracy, your local elementary school, the Boy Scouts of America, everything over and over. What is the strongest institution in America that it is plausible for conservatives to have any influence in? It is the Republican Party, because they are the opposition party in the United States.
Period.
And there are a million things in the United States that cause that to be the case. Just organically, who are you going to vote for if you don't like the guy in charge? Makes the most sense to vote for the most powerful opposition party. And I think it's very easy for conservatives to embrace it's psychologically tempting to go doomer and say, there's no hope. They always fail us. They always let us down. It's cathartic to say that, to sort of scream. But it's not true. Would you rather live in a red state or a blue state? We can point towards a million different laws that make that the case. If you're in this state, you won't be arrested for having a gun. You won't be arrested if you defend yourself from a criminal. You can, in Arizona right now, for example, you can get money to send your kid to a private school or to homeschool instead of being forced to send them to a crappy public school. There are real wins that you can get at the state level. And this can manifest at the federal level.
And Florida's a much freer state than California. And
precisely.
So I think it would be better to say that don't vote for the Republican Party, vote for the opposition party.
Yeah.
And just say, call it the opposition party. And I hope everyone understands, we're making huge gains. We used to have like two or three good senators. Now we have like 15.
Yeah,
we have 15 pretty good ones and like 10 excellent ones.
If you try to take over the Republican Party and reform it and fail, you can always try again later, and you may at least mitigate what the Democrats want to do. But let's say you try to do your third party and it doesn't quite take, and we end up in an election and the Republicans get 25% and our new third party gets 25%. What happens? Well, the Democrats get, 400 House seats.
Yes.
And then what do they do with 400 House seats? They do whatever they want. And if you want an example where this has happened, in Alberta, Canada, the most conservative province of Canada, they had a right-wing insurgency. I think they called it like the Wild Rose Party. And they had an insurgency because they thought their conservative party in the province wasn't conservative enough. So they split the vote, and it caused a left-wing government to get elected in Alberta. And what did they do? They passed a bunch of left-wing stuff. And not all of that left-wing stuff has been undone, I believe. They eventually did get government back, but that's the nature of laws. They don't all get changed. And now Alberta's a more liberal province than it was before. That's not good.
The home of Edmonton and Calgary.
Yes.
It's huge natural resources there. It's a really, really great. By the way, they're very right-wing people there.
A ton.
Tucker filled out a sports stadium
exactly.
in
There's
Alberta.
There's tons of conservatives.
Yes.
But if you decide to intentionally split your coalition into smaller groups when you haven't beaten the big enemy,
You dilute your influence.
Exactly. Yeah.
So why is it that Republicans, Blake, minute remaining, are more likely to be upset with their leaders to the point of not voting? We'll talk about this in the next segment, but also third party than the Democrats.
I don't want to say specifically that they are more likely, because we do see there are insurgencies on the left. Hillary Clinton probably lost in 2016 because they had a lot of angry people. And so this is a funny thing. If you really follow American politics, you see both sides saying the same thing. They'll say like, our side is too obsessed with principle, and the enemy, they only care about winning. And they'll say their side always delivers for them and our side never delivers for us. I don't want to say who it's more true for. I think it is probably true Democrats deliver a bit more consistently. I think that's probably because a lot of Democratic principles are things you can solve by just giving people money. So they say, we're going to run and we're going to expand these programs and everyone gets money. Whereas ours, it's stickier stuff. It's more controversial. We're going to change the rules.
More abstract.
It's more abstract. It's tougher to get people to, like, get the cojones to do it. But it is false to say they never deliver anything. And you want to have a growth mindset about things.
All right. Really quick question from Kimberly. Is Blake single? If so, what type of woman is he looking for to go on and date? It's a real question from Kimberly.
I don't know. Just not mentally ill.
There you go. So not on the left. What if I told you that most of the notable diaper brands support abortion, even footing the bill for their employees to travel to have an abortion? It's one thing to reject your customers. It's another thing to support their termination. If you're a parent sickened by woke corporations supporting the destruction of American values and our most precious blessing, our children, then Meet Every Life, America's pro-life diaper brand. Finally, a baby brand that aligns with your values and is unapologetically pro-life. Every Life believes that no matter where someone is from, what they look like, planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle worth protecting and defending. Every Life offers high-performing premium diapers and wipes created with your little ones in mind. Their diapers are made without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. It's a wonderful company. I can speak for it personally. It's amazing. Go to everylife.com for diapers and wipe bundles delivered right to your doorstep and feel good knowing every purchase changes lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is changing diapers, changing lives. Learn more today at everylife.com. That is everylife.com. Use promo code Charlie for 10% off your order today. All right, let's get to this dialogue here. I said this to you, Blake. You want to respond to it. Essentially, it's a guy that listens to the Charlie Kirk Show. He's a Trump fan, but he says, I'm sitting out 2024. I'm not voting because Republicans are so terrible. And I just want to say, Blake, we do get a fair amount of these emails.
We do.
And I try to tell Republican leaders this, that there are people that will watch our show, that will donate to us, that will subscribe to us, that will not vote.
And then when we lose, they will say only fraud could explain that we lost
and
the election.
I don't want to defend them, but I'm going to explain, and then I'll let you, because I do not like this attitude. They think the greatest way they can get people to get to notice them is by not voting. It is by absence they will be noticed, which I think is insane.
I think it's
also kind of evil.
It's insane, I think, and I don't think it's fully pragmatic, truthfully. I think when you think about how politics are, politics is not, it's not just a, I want to achieve this outcome thing for a lot of people. There's a very spiritual element. It's a way you give your life meaning by being engaged with it. And it's a form, it's like a form of personal expression, actually. And so what I think you get is people who don't vote. A lot of it is if they vote for someone and that person loses, they feel like they've been defeated and it was all a waste. Whereas if they don't vote, it's like they're asserting sovereignty over themselves, that they are indifferent to the outcome. They convince themselves that they don't care this way, when in fact they do care deeply. And I think an important thing is what you do is you have to emphasize that we do politics not to show that we are conservative. We do politics because we are trying to work for outcomes, and we know that we will not always get those outcomes. We may very rarely get those outcomes. We may never get those outcomes. We fight for them because it is the right thing to do, as you say. And you have to pursue the path that is most likely to bring that outcome. And in a system like ours, where the person who gets the most pieces of paper in the box, you have a duty to make sure your piece of paper goes in that box. And you know, will your vote make a difference? On an average, no. Like most elections are not decided by one vote.
Well, but in Arizona, Attorney General races are by 280 votes.
Yes, exactly. So it's depressing to think that there's probably
300 point this out. So we do this event. You've been here before. Freedom Night in America. We have like 2,000 people show up. So if all 2,000 people had that attitude in that one event, then you would not win the attorney general.
Exactly.
Case. Like, I mean, just like, let's forget, like, oh, it's because it's easy to get like, oh, millions of votes, things get lost. That's a very isolated example. And so, but what's the downside? Filling out a piece of paper and sending it in?
That's what I mean. The downside is essentially that when they vote and it doesn't go well, they take it too personally almost. Like, how dare you make me care about this candidate? And then that candidate lost. And frankly, you got to toughen up. It's like, oh, our guy lost. Next time.
Yeah, one of our listeners says, I encourage you to think about the risk-reward calculation. Voting is asymmetric, meaning the cost of your time to vote equals just a few minutes of your time versus huge potential reward if we win.
And yeah.
It's also just, I think you have a moral obligation to vote regardless. You have a moral obligation.
And, you know, people died for this system to come into place.
Hi, Charlie. I'm a member and a question for you. Members.charliekirk.com. I'm a chief HR manager. Officer and conservative. No typos. Both are real and have been a fan of your podcast since 2020. My profession gets a really bad rap, and I'm sad to say it's well deserved. I've been in this role at three different companies over 15 years and have to address this topic you talk about regularly on your show: wokeism, the decline of meritocracy, COVID, etc. For example, the CEO and others of the company I work for during COVID were very supportive of vaccine mandates and terminating people if they did not comply. I was able to prevent both, thankfully, praise God. It had to have been divine intervention. At a different company, I eliminated the DEI department upon my arrival so the company could invest in more business impactful initiatives. I do this very quietly and under the radar. If I was outspoken, I don't think I could do these things. So the question is, what do you think about the group of silent influencers out there? You touched briefly on this during an episode this week and how those of us that are silent influencers get to know each other so we don't feel alone. I'd love to talk to other conservatives in HR that are facing the same things about me and are challenging. Please do not use my name if you read this on air. Thank you. First of all, whoever you are, male or female, it's written like a female. I mean that positively. You're a hero. You're talking about, you listen to the show, you're like getting rid of DEI departments. You do not want your name mentioned. Like, we need more patriots like this. Would love to connect you with more silent influencers. And I just gotta be honest, it gives me comfort that all the work we're doing on the show, like there's like this like sleeper cell HR person that's like smashing wokeism wherever it exists.
What
that's
a hero.
That's kind of awesome,
isn't
it? What
a national hero.
Isn't that awesome?
It is great.
So what is your reaction to that, Blake? And also how, if you're, by the way, we talk a lot about political power, but if you have corporate power, you should use that power for good.
You should. And I think there is a type of conservative, I don't want to say, you don't go around thuggishly saying, look, everyone in this company must vote for Trump or whatever, because it won't work, for one. But what you should look out for is, we run into a lot of people who are like, what can I do for the movement? And or like young people who want to do stuff in politics. And it's very common to think, well, what I could do is start a podcast, or I could write op-eds, or I could, you know, do stuff, you know, do like public political stuff. But for a lot of people, the single best thing you can do for the movement is be a successful person, be a pillar of your community. And then importantly, pull up people behind you. So make sure that they're, you know, this nation has a lot of systematic discrimination against people based on politics or, frankly, based on race.
Yeah.
You don't have to against counter that people. With your own. But literally, find talented people who might actually be, you know, worth your time and mentor them directly. Cultivate those people. Make it so you are undermining all of the sinister stuff that is happening
by creating new stuff. And I just say, become a creator. We're made in the image of our creator. So create a family. Create a business. Create an initiative. Create a community, right? Create something. And it doesn't have to be Google, or it doesn't have to be Goldman Sachs. It can be like, yeah, I get 10 neighbors together
instead
and
of
we help each other.
Instead of donating $100,000 to your alma mater, which they will then use to like spray paint the, you know, local intersection to say like have a rainbow flag and say Black Lives Matter. Donate $100,000 and have it be a scholarship that is 100% merit-based, or for someone who has worked a blue-collar job like during high school, something like that. And instead of, you know, whatever else that they give out scholarships for these days, there's things you can do. Be a pillar of your community. Do not be a person who is fuming on the internet.
I totally agree. Email us freedom@charliekirk.com, members.charliekirk.com. And thank you, whoever you are, for being a quiet HR manager for good. Zach says, hey, Charlie, big fan of the show here. I'm sure to watch your show every day. Well, with all the Hamas protests going on college campuses, I can't help but ask, what could this be a distraction from? If indeed it is a distraction, which we're all accustomed to this point, thanks and God bless. I don't know if it's a distraction, right?
This is a thing you'll hear a lot from conservatives that, you know, this could be a distraction.
Sometimes it's true.
I don't think it is.
Okay, you have to admit, sometimes if Joe Biden were to like sign a very controversial executive order, and he might be like having a family crisis. Sometimes there is something done by
maybe like Bill Clinton supposedly bombed Iraq to distract from Monica Lewinsky.
I believe that.
Maybe it didn't work. So I think honestly, I dislike it because it's a pattern on the right to sort of like prove I'm so smart. I see through the enemy's lies on the media. So I see that this is a distraction. And like the real distraction is distracting you from living your life and not being obsessed with things.
What I think they might mean though is not that there's some sort of grand maestro, is that the media might be covering this more than another story that might be bigger.
For sure.
So that's a legit
point. Okay, then if you want to know what they're distracting from, the border is still wide open.
There you go. So it's now we're agreeing. Mean it that way.
It was covered a lot in December and January, and then they stopped. The border did not fix itself. It's still a disaster. They're still sending the migrants everywhere. Biden is still really old. He's not getting any younger.
But you would agree that the media will select certain stories to distract from other stories. So, for example, they're not spending...
Even then, I think they just get bored with things. Okay. The media wants to cover new stuff, cult of the new.
So, Blake, what do you think is, like, the biggest story in the world right now?
Probably the stupid protests on campus.
Okay. Well, not Venice.
Venice? Really? Like, they've got a photo of Venice on the New York
Welcome
Times
to Venice.
Page?
That'll be €5, please. I mean, that's an example of, like, looky here.
Yeah, okay, and then they got the Trump collusion, or not,
the immunity.
Trump immunity case.
I agree with you generally on this. I'm just saying that at times they'll throw smokescreen grenades.
Yeah, the Times sometimes will announce that they're, like, the biggest thing with media bias is actually, it's not...
By omission.
They don't, it's by omission, or by narrative setting, or by framing. And as I've said before, the New York Times, almost everything they report is literally true in some way. It is not that they print fabricated stuff. It's their power of what they choose to emphasize. Mm-hmm. So it was like after Russiagate was a bust, one of the top editors at the New York Times, I can't remember if it was the editor-in-chief or who it was, but he literally did a statement to all the reporters where he says, yeah, well, since Russiagate was a bust, we're going to have our focus now be on racism in America. And he says this in 2019.
And then it spikes, and then, right?
Well, it was already spiking, but it keeps spiking up through, of course, George Floyd. And we have our national reckoning, as they called it.
Race reckoning. Racial
reckoning. And they wrecked a lot of things, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say, was that a distraction? No, that was the New York Times has enough power, it can force a narrative. And the George Floyd riots were definitely not a distraction. That was a very big story that was ginned up by the media because of what they choose to report on. They say, oh, they're murdering all of these innocent people. The police are out of control. There's thousands, you know, they create what people choose to care about. It's like a poll 15 years ago, most Black Americans did not really say that the police were racist against them. And then 15 years later, they say they are, when every objective evidence is that they were being shot less. They were being arrested less than they had been 15 years before.
Yeah, you're talking about frequency of which they mention all this nonsense, and it just goes up like, you know,
exactly.
Exponentially, right? Especially during the quote unquote racial reckoning. Elon Musk just highlighted that. Hey, everybody. Charlie Kirk here. I talked to you about how horrible nutrition has become for people in our ultra-processed food society. Truth is, it's even worse for our beloved dogs. Seen dog food lately? It's more like dead food. Mr. Briggs is our best friend, and the more adventurous we are, I've realized that food is the most important thing ensuring he's healthy. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black has invested everything into bringing our dog's food to life. He created Rough Greens, not dog food. It's a natural supplement to your dog's existing food. Full of essential vitamins and minerals and made right here in America. You don't have to change your dog's food. Just adding Rough Greens to their existing diet will be the best decision you ever made to improve their life. Mr. Briggs has more energy, plays longer, and is overall the best version of himself. Dr. Black is so confident that this will change your dog's life, he is providing a free Jumpstart trial bag so your dog can try it. You just cover the shipping. Head to roughgreens.com/Kirk. That is RUFFgreens.com/Kirk. Go to roughgreens.com/Kirk to grab yours today. Roughgreens.com/Kirk. Okay, let's get to another question here. What Charlie, a member, Kelly, what are your thoughts on all the college campus protesters wearing face coverings or some sort of masks? If you were so proud to defend Hamas, why not show your face? COVID set the stage, enabled the rise in crime overall as criminals wearing a mask and have no fear of being identified. I think that's actually really smart. Back in my day, if you walked anywhere wearing a mask, guns would be drawn on you. The immediate response was defensive because it became clear to rob and destroy. Because the COVID masks are allowed and encouraged, the enemy is brazen now. I personally was convicted immediately when mask mandates came out, and it was indeed evil and the work of the enemy. Also, clearly these are extreme protesting movements organized. Anyone working to trace back the money, I think many of these young people are getting paid. So I actually do agree that the mask mandate, I'm not saying it was intentional, but a unintentional byproduct is that it's given criminals an ability to be anonymous.
100%.
Oh, so you agree with that? Okay.
100%. It enabled crime because you would have masked guys go in stores
and you still do
looting them. Yeah, they still do it. But
now it's like socially acceptable to walk around with a mask.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you're wearing like a balaclava, like, the ski mask thing, people are still shady, suspicious about it. Wearing masks thing, it's interesting to me because I think we'd agree it's important to be able to be anonymous on the internet.
Absolutely.
And frankly, it's probably important to be able to cover your face. I can imagine a lot of valid reasons someone on the right would want to do that because you've freaking face tracking software and
that's true.
You know, they can, oh yeah, we found out who this guy is. We sent it to his employer, all these things. I think the ability to speak and protest anonymously is an important right in America.
No, I think we need to be consistent because I mean, the Federalist Papers are written anonymously.
Yeah.
I do think that there's I think it's a little cowardly to go out into the streets and do it.
But yeah,
What
they do is if they use it and then go violent, okay, sending cops, hold them on the ground, take the mask off,
identify them,
charge them.
We totally agree. Yes. But I think what Blake is saying is true is that anonymous speech is protected American speech. The Federalist Papers are written anonymously for a reason. I keep on going back to that. And Soros is funding some of these protests.
Oh, for sure. Well, it's Soros has given money to these groups that are then organizing protests. I dislike paid protests because it implies this is not a real cause, and it very much is.
Well, I want to die. It is a real cause, but I think that there's more of a synthetic nature than I think people realize, that there are outside agitators that go into these things with the signs and the tents, and they organize the 99%. So a bunch of petulant children are building tent encampments on college campuses with copycat protests spreading around the country. Totally organic? Well, no. Soros-backed SJP organized protests at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Ohio State, Emory, and Georgia, and they're popping up across the country. So, Blake, it's a real cause, but there's certainly, let's say, lieutenants that come and organize this thing.
Oh yeah, there's a long left-wing tradition of that. I mean, I was actually just reading a book written in 1870, and it's about a guy who shows up in a town in Russia to set up revolutionary cells. Says, "Hey, I'm here to organize the revolution. Who wants to join my terrorist
club?" What year was this?
1870.
1870.
1870.
So, for communism?
Anarchism at the time, nihilism. But it was the forerunners of Russian communism.
Awfully unsuccessful in 1870.
And that is the cell-based organization of agitation that is popular on the left. The left has a long tradition of, I am the professional revolutionary who's here to tell you how to do things. They publish guides on how to do this. That's what Rules for Radicals is.
Yes.
And so to say that, it doesn't necessarily mean it's astroturfed. It really is, I have some expertise, or let's copy what these guys are doing. It's very distributed. It can be a little bottom up, like, oh, these guys in this school came up with this way of doing it, and then everyone starts copying them.
Mm-hmm.
Like in 2015, I can't remember what school. I think it started at University of Missouri. They started having those
protests. Hands up, don't shoot.
Yeah, and it was because of something dumb. The university president like had an awkward moment on camera, and then so they demanded he resign. It was insane. And then they start publishing demand lists, and then soon 100 different campuses had demand lists that were related to racism on their campus, allegedly. And I think you're seeing this again now. Cornell just had a list of demands. I think they're all publishing these demand lists, and they're often very similar to each other. So that's just, it's the way the left works, is you'll have your national body. It will have all their little distributed groups. They'll bring in outside people who are really, really good at protesting all of the time. And they have that whole dynamic that I think, maybe has James Lindsay talked about this, where they'll talk, you know, oh, peaceful protest, knowing that some of the people aren't peaceful, and there's like That's selected right. agitators who go further.
Yes.
At either Columbia or some other school, they literally started giving people wristbands where take the wristband that's red if
yellow,
you're willing to be arrested,
if you don't want to be arrested
and yellow if you don't want to be. You know, you have hierarchies of people. These are the ones who are the biggest radicals. These are the ones who are not. It's just a whole ecosystem that we don't fully understand.
It's a professional protesting industry.
Yeah.
With tactics and planning and like a lot of funding too.
Yeah. And well, but the funding is not the most important thing. Like, yes, a Soros group, like, because the way it'll go is a Soros group gives money to this group and then this group does stuff. But the amount of money is not enough to pay for what they're doing. And nor is this stuff actually that expensive to do in the first place. It's a tent. You can buy a tent for $25 at Walmart.
Yes. But let me ask you a question. If it wasn't for the sophisticated approach, do you think that this would spread the way it has?
Truthfully, I think it would. I think it's always a strong impulse on both sides of politics to believe that the other side is sort of faking it, that they are bought off, or that they're only doing this for some sort of,
or whatever,
for like some greed based reason. When the truth is, most people who care enough to be involved in politics care about politics. And so, you know, the Israel-Palestine issue, as an example, has been around for decades. It has been a big cause on the left for decades. And because of an unpredictable event last fall, it has become a huge issue this year. And I think that is largely organic. And I think you can make it a bigger deal, like when you have press outlets that are pushing it and saying this is a big deal over and over again, and they influence people. But I don't think it's a big deal because someone paid money to make it a big deal, like in some sort of short sight, like in some sort of just, you know, very short order thing of, oh, I paid $20,000 and now Palestine's a big issue on this campus.
All right, everybody, email us freedom@charliekirk.com and become a member, members.charliekirk.com. Let's go to this one here. Karen says, hi, Charlie. I listen to pretty much all of your podcasts on the phone. I've heard many times you say that you are going to primary someone if they don't vote the way of a true conservative. I don't remember names. Maybe I'm not familiar with them in other states. I'm in California. My question is, how many and who of those states that have been primaried actually lost? I'm curious about your success rates. I know you're very influential. Keep broadcasting. I'll keep listening. We haven't engaged in that many primaries. We did help get rid of Liz Cheney, but we weren't primarily involved in that. What I was talking about, though, is the senators. And to be honest, we're not as successful as we want to be because it's really hard to beat incumbents. It's really hard. Now, the primaries that we're most interested in is red states. Is if you are in a very deep red state and you are voting as if you are a Massachusetts liberal, then that disconnect must be addressed and must be exploited. We're very successful with J.D. Vance, by the way. We were like one of the first endorsements of J.D. Vance. I went out there. I campaigned for him. And now everyone loves J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is super well supported.
States where a Republican is the 90%+ favorite to win should elect very conservative Republicans,
yes,
or you are wasting your time. Because we'll get plenty of moderates, hopefully, running in states that are purple.
Like Maryland.
Yeah, like Maryland.
Which
so
is blue, not just
we're
purple.
We're getting emails where people say they don't want to support Larry Hogan for Senate because he's not MAGA, he's not a Trump supporter.
Which he isn't.
Which he's not. But we will be blunt. The chances of electing a MAGA conservative in Maryland is not low. It is zero.
Yeah, it's not gonna
happen. Just is not happening. And this is a somewhat new thing. So if you're older and you've been around, it's a little different. You could elect a random Republican in Illinois even in 2010.
Yeah.
Well, will never happen again.
Mark Kirk won the U.S. Senate race in 2010 against Dan Seals.
Yeah. And it was great. You know, was he one of the most liberal Republicans? Yes.
Yes.
Did he still vote?
I worked on that race.
Did he vote in our direction on things that we care about? Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. He did. Did he hold up things that Democrats would have done otherwise? Yes. Yes, he did. And will Hogan do that? I think so. Will Hogan vote to confirm judicial nominees by Donald Trump? I bet he probably will. Will Hogan vote to confirm cabinet appointees of Donald Trump? I bet he probably will. Will he vote in favor of some things we want to do? Yes.
Yes.
And you know who won't? The Democrat they're going to elect otherwise.
No, that's right. And so the question is, do we want political power or not?
Yeah. And if we, why do we want political power? It is not as like, it is not merely as an expression of our principles where like only someone who's 100% with us is worth electing. You have to have, you know, an achievement mindset. We are doing this because we want to do something. We want to actually pass laws. We want to make America better. And the halfway ally of me is better than a full-time enemy. Politics is actually a thing where it is sometimes okay to be lukewarm if the alternative is a full-time enemy. You shouldn't be lukewarm yourself. You shouldn't be weak yourself. But there's a whole spectrum of people. Politics is a spectrum. Unlike sex.
Yes, exactly.
Politics is a spectrum, and the people who are closer to you on the spectrum are better than the people who are farther away. And that's especially the case in a place like Maryland. But on the flip side, to emphasize, in a state like Utah, in a state like Idaho, in a state like Nebraska, we should be getting maximally conservative stuff because that's where we can get it.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is a great question for you, Blake. Charlie, or team, again, it's a member from Charles. People today are condemning Christianity. I'm wondering why no one speaks out about condemning Islam. There's a series of verses here from the Surah, O true believers, when you encounter the unbelievers, strike off their heads. Surah 2191. If I'm taking these out of context, let me know. Slay the pagans wherever you find them. This is from, is the Surah the Quran? Is that, or is that a separate text?
Surah, I think, is a separate, let me see.
Is that like the Talmud?
I'm trying to remember my vocab.
No, it's a chapter of the Quran. No, it is. Yeah, that's right. So I will instill terror into the hearts of the unbelievers. Smite ye above their neck and smite all fingertips off them. It is not ye who slew them. This is part of the question. Literally, he wrote these.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, fight those who do not believe in God in the last day and fight people of the book, Christian and Jews, who do not accept the religion of truth, Islam, until they pay tribute by hand, being inferior. Blake, are these is this taking Islam out of context? Why are people afraid of talking about Shia supremacism, Sharia supremacism?
Well, why are they afraid? Well, one, I guess, you know, a new thing came on TV, so to speak. Like, we had the war on terror for a long time, and then you did see it. But now, I mean, when was the last terrorist attack in the U.S.?
I mean, probably like San Bernardino.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, ISIS actually was defeated. We got out of Iraq. We got out of Afghanistan. Our, you know, everything focused towards this emphasis on, like, racism as the all-consuming obsession of American life. And besides, beyond that, no, it's a safe target. It's safe to beat up on Christianity. It is like, you know, Islam is an oppressed group because they're poor and they're unsuccessful.
Even because Islam is crappy.
Well, why is that the case?
Like, oh, you want to get into that?
Be factual. Don't get into the
okay, all right.
higher
I'll,
thresholds
I'll pull
of...
back. What I will say is, in ancient times, you know, where was the Bible written?
Where was it?
Where does it take place?
Books. It's in the Middle East.
It takes place in the Middle East.
Judea and Samaria.
Why does it take place in the Middle East? Because the Middle East was actually the summit of civilization 3,000 years ago. Egypt, big important country, big rich country. Modern day Iraq is where civilization started.
Literally.
Sumer and and Babylon.
Even more specifically, the Tigris and the Euphrates are in the Garden of Eden story.
Yes, that is where civilization emerges. The first great empire is Iran. Iran is this enormously important civilizational power.
Okay, before we get into this, I just want to say there's plenty of amazing Muslims that I know, Dr. Zudi Jasser being one of them. However, Blake has a take that that the ideology itself has a lot of problems that go unaddressed.
Well, so I want to start with, first, it's interesting that you say, and others say, Islam needs a reformation, mm-hmm. which I know you're Protestant, of course, so pro-reformation.
I'm very pro-reformation.
There's a misunderstanding. Do you think the Reformation was about making Christianity, like, chill out and be moderate?
No.
It wasn't.
It was back to the roots.
It was a fundamentalist movement, in a sense.
It was correct.
A claim. The claim of the Protestant Reformation was, all this stuff Catholicism did is a fake edifice that they built on top of real Christianity. Let's go back to how the apostles did it. Islam had that Reformation. It's called Al-Qaeda. It's called Salafism. Salafism is a fundamentalist Islamic movement that says we need to go back to the roots of Islam as it's practiced, as it was practiced by the Prophet and his companions. Now, here's an important thing. What does Jesus do in the Bible?
A lot.
Yeah, but so what does he not do? Does he become a warlord? Does he ride out against the Romans?
No,
does he sack villages? Does he take women as, you know, what his right hand possesses and make them his slaves that he can have sex with? No, Jesus doesn't do those things. But you know who does do it? The Prophet. And this is the root of a lot of what makes Islam different. Is it actually, as its genesis, it is a religion of a warrior desert tribe.
Bedouins.
Yeah, it's a warrior desert tribe. Maybe Islam made them better over the paganism that they practiced before, but I'd argue it basically made every other civilization it touched worse. Iran, massive civilization, hugely important. Immensely
true.
Rich literary culture,
the Persians.
Scientific
no, this
culture.
Is right. this
they
is
were
right.
an equal of the Roman Empire, and then they got conquered by Islam, and they stick around for a while because they were a great civilization and they have a lot of inertia from that. But the most flowering parts of Persian civilization were the parts that were Zoroastrian, Jewish, Persian. You'd have all these cases where a guy is like an important scientist and you go back and, oh, actually his father converted to Islam, you know, one generation before. Stuff like that. Egypt, hugely important civilization. There are a thousand important Christian writers who were in Alexandria.
St. Augustine of Hippo.
He was in Tunisia, but similar place. It was a North African place. And Egypt, tons of important writers, tons of important philosophers, Platonic philosophy. When has Egypt mattered ever since? It has been a plaything that gets tossed back and forth between different conquerors.
It's an incredibly poor country, too.
Yes, and it's just a much more troubled country. And the best facets of Egypt are the Christian communities in Egypt. And the best facets in Palestine are the Christian communities in Palestine, in Lebanon. You can, like, measure this. It's actually
so
remarkable.
I want to ask the question, is there something inherent in the ideology that causes this? What I think by Reformation some people mean is that it will westernize.
I agree it would be better if it westernized.
In the sense that it does not have to be interlinked with government power.
So this is an important difference. So Christianity has always, if you go to the Bible, the intersection between like New Testament Christianity and the government is very thin. And you have to sort of figure out what he means. You know, he says the render unto Caesar thing, but there's no rules like what should a Christian polity look like? How should Christian politics be organized? We try to reach conclusions about that based on the Old Testament and what early Christians did, but it's not obvious.
It's not intertwined.
Islam is not like that. Islam says extremely explicitly, how should a Muslim society work? It should have these rules. It is political from the very beginning. When they start it, they have the Ummah, the community of believers, and they are led by Muhammad. He dies. They are then led by Abu Bakr, I believe his father-in-law. And then he dies. And then they have Umar, the next caliph. So they have these early caliphs. And all of their examples of how you're supposed to live in an Islamic society are premised on what did these guys do? So the Quran is kind of written in a weird way. It's like this flowery Arab poetry. It was supposedly revealed to Muhammad, like by the angel Gabriel. We obviously don't believe that was the case.
Correct.
There's funny parts of it, like, for example, where Muhammad speaking, saying, you know, this is what Gabriel told me to tell you. And he says, the angel wants you to know that Muhammad's wives are being kind of annoying and are nagging him too much. But Muhammad is too good a person to tell them this. But the angel wanted Muhammad to tell you this.
Is
and
that really
if you aren't
there?
Better, he can get rid of you and replace you with better wives. That is the thing that happens. So what they have to do is, it's not as long as the Bible, and it's not as clear on certain things. So what you're supposed to do as a Muslim is heavily based on the hadiths. Are you familiar with these?
Is that the commentary?
It's not even commentary. I think it means sayings in Arabic, and it's a, or deeds, something like that. What it is it's a collection. It's massive, and there's several different volumes
of
it. It's
like the Talmud.
They're a collection. Not even that, because the Talmud is rabbis arguing about stuff. So it'll be Rabbi Hezekiah said this, yeah. And then Rabbi Solomon said this. What the hadiths are is it'll say Aisha, the wife of the prophet. That's the 9-year-old that he married.
Muhammad married a girl.
Yes, he married a 9-year-old. And you cannot criticize him because Muhammad is above criticism. And it says in the hadiths that anyone who criticizes Muhammad should be killed. And so what the hadiths are is their testimony from early Muslims and then supposedly passed down. So it'll be Aisha told Omar this, who told Abu Bakr
it's
this.
It's an oral tradition.
It's an oral tradition that was then written down about 100, 150 years later. And they'll just be accounts of what the prophet did. And some of them will just be absolutely surreal. Like, I actually, because I'm a crazy person, I have bookmarks of funny stuff. Apologies in advance for this one. This is from the Bukhari hadiths, which are the most canonical one. And it says, Hudayfa added, Allah's messenger, Muhammad, would go to the dumps of some people and urinate while standing. So it's okay to urinate while standing because the prophet did that. They have testimony about this. They would say, like, I think there's a hadith where he says, if people are gathered for a dinner, they should sit in a circle. And they're like, okay, well, the prophet said to do that. And some of it's more serious. Some of it will be like the reason they have the death penalty for adultery in Islam is they have hadiths where someone commits adultery and the prophet orders them to be stoned. And this is what you're supposed to look to as your guide for how to do things.
So in closing, it is an ideology that is incompatible with a lot of Western values.
I think so. And it would be good if it westernized, but I think you have to recognize there are obstacles to this, that early Muslims are warlords who spread the religion by conquest. In Islam, in early Islam, it is unambiguously clear that it is good to fight for Islam, to wage war for Allah. And the people who point this out are being, by most standards, good Muslims.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.